This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Yeah, sweet. It's now or never for Manchester City. Their title hopes are hanging by the proverbial thread with another potentially season-defining match against Aston Villa to come tonight. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm David Powell.
I'm Alex Michelle.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast. Start of, well, a busy period, hopefully, for Manchester City. Just looking through the schedule, it's going to be 2 games per week up until the foreseeable, hopefully, until the end of the season. Chaps, welcome. If you're looking for reaction to the goalless draw against Arsenal, you can go back on your podcast feed and find it there. We will we'll turn attention to, obviously, tonight's game. I wanted to start, though. I'm sure most people listening to this show would have heard, at least seen some of the documentary that was released on Netflix. Officially, no spoilers. I was just saying it sounds stupid to say no spoilers for something when you know what happens and what the ending is. But, you know, no sort of going into too much detail, Alex. But what have you made of it so far?
Yeah, I'm only halfway through the first episode because I haven't had it all day over here since I'm a few hours behind you all. But yeah, I think I'll more speak on like the larger sort of ramifications for it, because I think for most of us, all of us who are talking here, and then I assume the vast majority of the listeners, there won't be too much that's new. Like, we've pretty much seen most of what's there, at least from what I've seen so far. A lot of it is through the media that City already do, and then they sort of have just repackaged it, cut it up into smaller bits. And yeah, it's really well put together. It's amazingly done. But I think the larger ramifications are City's growing fan base and the fact that there will be so many people who, either through, you know, getting told from a family member or a friend of a friend who already supports City, or who just somehow stumbles upon this and wants to get into it, like, drawing some similarities between how F1 has grown with that series. And I know this is going to be a bit more niche because it's just covering City. Yeah. So it won't grow as big as that, but there is definitely going to be a big surge of new City fans coming in. I think there are certainly both positives and negatives to that. I've heard people voicing both sides, but for me, it's far more positive than negative. I think, you know, there will be some fans who come on social media and don't really know what to expect and they'll be tuning into the Villa game and they'll be like, where's Gundogan gone? But yeah, I don't know. I think we have to embrace that and, you know, understand that there are going to be people coming to this fan base with a lot less knowledge and give them the time to sort of bed into things. And yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. You know, just first sort of reaction from watching it. I've not watched it all. I sort of skimmed through. I've seen a couple of episodes in full, but I've skimmed through sort of the whole thing just to sort of get the feel of it. You know, see who was involved, interviews and players and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, it is David, isn't it? It's positioned at somebody who is going to know the bare minimum, if not nothing at all, about football, let alone Manchester City in general. You know, it goes into great detail about explaining what the Champions League is and the Premier League and, you know, all these sort of different facets and competitions, etc. But I enjoy the insight, I think, a bit more than sort of throw the comparison to the other City documentary we've seen in the Guardiola era, which was the Amazon one. That felt a little bit shiny, and this is obviously very well done. It's a bit of a PR spin for the club itself. They are trying to attract new supporters and whatnot, but it feels like they've just maybe lifted the curtain up a little bit more than we'd seen before. You get to see a bit more personality in Guardiola and the players, and I think that's something that's great.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. I think like it actually shows quite a lot of personality and a lot of good personality as well for the neutrals. If you don't support Man City and you've just come in to watch it for the first time and thought this is a successful soccer or football club, whatever, wherever you're from in the world, you would watch it and think, God, some of these players are actually really likable, down to earth. Like, no spoilers, like you said, but there's certain clips in there that you think people earning so much money and under so much like sort of pressure are quite down to earth at times. And I think that's probably what the club want the club to look like. We've had players in the past like Adebayor, Tevez, that have given the club quite a lot of bad press. Everyone in the documentary is shown to be good, honest people. Like, I want to say some clips here, but I'm not going to. But like,
it's hard, isn't it?
the players come across really well in it. The club comes across really well in it, and I think from what I've taken from it, timing wise is brilliant. I know everyone was scrambling for it to come out months ago, but where we're at as a club at the moment, as a side, it's come out probably a good time to lift the fans again and think, actually, you know what? We're in a worse position than this last season, and we went and did the unthinkable. So, like, to try and give us a little bit of a boost, like what happened last year with the 1-1-5 charges, it lifted the fans at the right time. Hopefully, it does the same for tomorrow night. And my biggest takeaway is just, I think I said it in the group chat earlier, but Pep is an absolute lunatic, and I love him.
he's a madman, isn't he? Yeah. We'll move on now, but just honest to God, that insight. And again, going back to what we saw, bits and bobs, didn't we, in the Amazon one? The team talk at Wigan away and sit down, nobody talk, and if you were tired, fuck you. But he just looks like he's really enjoyed being a part of this, and the players as well. And look, if you weren't thinking about watching it, then firstly, why? But secondly, implore you to do so. I know many listeners will have watched all six episodes. And I think later on in the week, if we get time, depending on what happens against Aston Villa, we'll maybe do a little bit more of an in-depth look at some of the, you know, the talking points to take from it. But Alex, I guess we'll move on, because as David references there, it comes, I think, at a decent time, because obviously there was a disappointment after the Arsenal game at the weekend, having had an opportunity to really stake a claim in the title race, possibly even eliminate one of the title rivals as well with a win. That didn't happen, as we know, but it maybe just rejuvenates that energy from a fan base point of view more than anything, which is going to be needed against Aston Villa, because I kind of feel like we're in must-win territory now.
Yeah, it will be, especially at home. And I know for me personally, that's something that I've been needing at the moment. I think if we flash back about a month ago, in my appearances on the pod, I was talking about how optimistic I was that we would all put the pieces together, and that Pep had this grand vision, and Grealish and Kovacic haven't played with the primary side before, and all this about just don't worry, just wait a little bit, get through these games, and then you'll see the true vision. And now we're through the Liverpool and Arsenal games, and I'm not sure I see the true vision myself. And so the one thing that I'm really looking for in this match is Pep and City to make a statement and to show me something that I have been just wanting to see time and time again this season, and we have only gotten a few glimpses of. And that is just a true staple City performance in terms of playing the way that we know we can play and playing in a way that, you know, dominates the game, and we come away with 3 points and we all have smiles on our face. I know we always want it to be that way, but it's definitely going to be a tough match, especially with the injuries. I'm sure we'll get to that as well. But yeah, in terms of morale and in terms of sort of getting the fan base on the same side and on the same page as each other, this is really a massive match, because the draw against Arsenal might be, I know you're extremely disappointed in that performance overall, but across the fan base, like there are of course mixed reactions to that, but regardless, we need that moment where we just need some statement performance this season to tie things together and give us that little bit of hope, because as I've mentioned before as well, like that starts to bleed into the players and starts to bleed into the performances, as much as it seems such a crazy thing to think that how do we as fans really impact things? No, it really does. Like the atmosphere in the stadium, the energy there is just going to play such a big role in terms of setting those players on the right path for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I thought the Arsenal performance was good enough. I was frustrated with Arsenal. Pathetic was the word I used on Sunday, and I think I'll double down on it now. But yeah, look, David, I used the term now or never really in the introduction to today's show, and it maybe it isn't, you know, maybe there's a world where City drop points tonight against Aston Villa and suddenly it looks like they're out of the title race, but a remarkable comeback in the last 8 games of the season. You know, we've seen it before. However, there is a feeling, isn't there, that it's different this time around. There's two other teams fighting for the title. There's City have got the target on the back. It kind of does have to be now or never from a City point of view.
It definitely feels like that. But like I have to keep reminding myself that it was now or never against the greatest Premier League side of all time in Liverpool. It was now or never against an Arsenal team that put up 51 points in the first half of the season. That there's always a challenge that is new to us that we've overcome, like whether that be goal difference against Man United, whether that be Liverpool 99 points, 100, or Arsenal last year, who looked at the start of the season like no one was going to get near them. So like, I'm not confident that we're going to overturn it, but I just have to keep reminding myself that I keep seeing these things on social media that like we were 2-0 down against Aston Villa at home with 20 minutes to go. And we won the league. Like we've been in a lot worse positions than this. But we have shown signs of being a better side than we are right now. And that's probably one of the biggest concerns for me, is that it does feel a little bit different. Like what Alex said there, like the energy in the crowd, but also the momentum and the sort of the feel from the press and stuff. I just don't feel like there's a lot of excitement or enthusiasm for City to go and do something, which, I mean, back-to-back trebles would be absolutely unbelievable. Like, but there feels a bit more sort of excitement towards Liverpool or Arteta, and the excitement for Haaland seems to have dwindled down from an outside perspective. And like Alex said, it all sort of plays into success. And like last year, there was so much buzz around the club towards the end of the season that I think it helped the fans. I think it helped the club and the players. And this year just feels a little bit more flat. And I think everyone calls it the treble hangover. And I think there's definitely that.
Yeah. If they released a Netflix documentary for City winning the first treble, what would they do for a back-to-back treble? I don't know, Christopher Nolan film, Tarantino. You know, it's going to need something like that, isn't it? Scorsese playing Pep. I don't know. Alex, look, there's some nice parallels, I guess, isn't there? Because although the timings are much off it, I think it was sort of early February last year when the charges hit and it rejuvenated City. But a game against Aston Villa at home has been, even going back the season before, it's been the catalyst for a league-winning campaign for City in completely contrasting fashions in terms of the last two seasons, of course. But just sort of before we get into the bits and bobs, and I guess we can speak about how City approached this game itself, because it's unlikely that they'll be playing against a team who sit back as deep as Arsenal. I did not think I'd be saying that, because Aston Villa will probably sit back deep, just not as much. But, you know, it feels like it needs to be a 3-0er. Not just a 1-0, 3 points would be great, but it feels like it kind of, like you said before, statement win. Get that energy going. Crystal Palace, 12:30 kickoff at the weekend. That's going to be another horrible game. Then we're going into Real Madrid quarterfinals, FA Cup semifinals, hopefully Champions League semifinals. You know, the energy just needs to be lifted back up a little bit. It can't be another game where, even if City win, we're going, all right, okay, that was okay, but what about this? What about that? Et cetera, et cetera.
100%. Yeah, and going back to something that David said there, we sort of look back on, you know, a three-peat or a treble-winning season, and you tend to forget the really tough moments. Like, I know Southampton last season will always stick out, and that's always a talking point for people, but it's hard to put yourself back into those moments where we were down to Arsenal in the table and it wasn't looking like we were going to win a treble whatsoever. And I think the thing with a side like this is that if you want to achieve something like a four-peat, you have to go through adversity in ways that you haven't before. It's pretty silly to think that this season is going to be, you know, a walk in the park or a carbon copy of seasons past. There's always going to be a new challenge. And I think an opportunity like this is, well, I sort of went a bit quick on myself there. I think an obstacle like this in terms of Villa is more so an opportunity than it is an actual obstacle, because it can be the catalyst for that change. And it really can be the moment that turns this season around. And I like the parallel that you drew between this fixture and just the recent history of it. There's some magic there that we really need to tap into. But I think for me, again, like going back to my sort of subdued expectations, when we look back at, first of all, how Villa set up against us, typically, like similar to Arsenal, a similar way, they'll push us wide and we won't have as easy access to central channels as we'll want into those areas. And then alongside that, when we look at our side this season, there just hasn't been that performance yet where we really have stamped that, you know, 3-0, 4-0 sort of like mark on the season, that against one of the bigger opponents, against, you know, a top six opponent like this, we need that as well in terms of, you know, not even just the fact that this is a crucial 3 points towards the title race, but as you said, early kickoff against Palace on Saturday, Real Madrid away on Tuesday. You need momentum into that. You need something going into that more than just scraping by here with a 1-0 win.
Yeah. David, a difficult question, I guess, before we go for the break, but if it's not 3 points, is it done for the Premier League?
Yeah, I think so. Like we said, there's always a chance for City, typical City, but like you said, there's two teams. It is, I mean, we need Andrew on here for the sort of stats, but it must be probability-wise so much more difficult with two teams ahead of you than just one. So, yeah, I think if we don't take 3 points tomorrow, I think we need to be focusing all in on Chelsea and Madrid.
I'll stick with you, David, just before we go for this break, but I don't know, maybe hindsight's wonderful here and we can look back at the end of the season with City lifting the Premier League title and say what a stupid question this is, or we can look back after they've crashed out of the Premier League title race, the Champions League, the FA Cup, etc., and say, oh, you know, maybe it would have been better. But do you think maybe if City did drop out the Premier League title to race, it does allow them to maybe put, you know, a bit more emphasis on two other competitions? Because to win a treble, you not only have to be fantastic, in fact, you have to be perfect, but you also have to have a lot of luck. And having, you know, been watching the documentary and stuff, I was reminded of the fact that City played Bayern Munich on the Wednesday. I can't remember the date exactly, but it was a Wednesday away from home against Bayern Munich in the second leg. Then had Sheffield United, who were a decent team in the Championship at the time. Obviously, they got promoted to the Premier League. But had they got Brighton, had they got Man United in that semi-final, I don't know if we're talking about a treble. We might be speaking about a Champions League, Premier League double, but you know, you need that bit of luck. And at the moment, it's scheduled to be Real Madrid, the second leg at home, which is a benefit on the Wednesday this year, and then Chelsea away in the semi-final. But it feels like we're being a little bit squeezed. We'll get onto team selection in a minute, but it does feel like we're getting a little bit squeezed.
Yeah, I think you never want to say just throw the Premier League, or if heaven forbid we did lose tomorrow night, but would it play in our favour? At the moment, as cliche as it is, there's two sides to every coin, isn't there? Like we were a team that does well with rhythm, momentum. At the moment, doesn't feel like we have a huge amount of momentum, even though we are so long unbeaten and everything else. But when we tend to take a week off, or we have them sort of weird gaps at the start of the season where we have a 7-day window or an 8-day window, we tend to be really bad after it. Don't know whether we always come out the blocks or anything, but we are a team that does better when we are playing quite a lot. But then again, on the other side, we're picking up injuries left, right, and centre at the moment. So it really is a tough one. We'll see, won't we?
Yeah, for the record, I'm not saying City need to throw away the Premier League title race at all. It's just, you know, at this point, we are sort of looking for ways to approach it. And look, I can't imagine having seen some of those clips from the documentary. Pep Guardiola will be sat there going, you know what, guys, don't worry about four in a row. We will be going full in. Okay, then, that'll do for part one. Join us after this short break and we'll speak about who might play against Aston Villa.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content, of course. Alex, players. There's not a lot of them, are there? Ironically, though, after the recent injury crisis, I guess you could throw it into that category. It's obviously focused around the defence. There's no Edison, Ake or Walker. Those three are confirmed to be out by Guardiola during yesterday's press conference. But I reckon the defence, you know, can probably get through it absolutely fine, be that by default or be that through, you know, whatever other factors. The questions, I reckon, probably are in the front six, not the back five. And where are you coming in on that? Because plenty of questions, as has always been the case this season, thrown up after Sunday's showing.
Yeah, I agree on the defence. I mean, it pretty much picks itself. And alongside that, it's sort of fortuitous how, if that can describe the situation in any way, it is a bit fortuitous how it worked out, because the back four that is there, assuming Stones is not fit to start, I don't know, he'll be borderline, but the back four, assumedly of Vardiol, Ruben, Akanji, Enrico Lewis, should be perfectly fine. It sort of fits well together. It gives Pep a nice range of options in terms of what to do. It's difficult when you get three games in quick succession, but individually, it looks like a nice defense on paper. And as you said, it really is just about this attack, because there are just so many question marks in pretty much every single, aside from Rodri, in the front five spots.
Well, I guess it's question marks around him, because surely there comes a point where his body, hopefully not touch wood, just gives up on him. No, I'm not saying this season, but, you know, down the line, I'm being pedantic, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Of course, yeah. But no, when I look at that front five, though, in this game, first of all, Erling Haaland, of course, he's going to start, but he had our only two shots in the last game against Villa when we lost 1-0. And it's just another one of those games where they're going to cut out the center of the park and you're not going to have access to him. So unless he bags a goal or two, the narratives on social media about him being, you know, not the right fit and not playing well at the moment are going to be there and just through and through. But you can see it coming a mile away. And alongside that, you know, Kevin De Bruyne hasn't been at his best. Phil Foden, if Kevin De Bruyne is playing, can't really play in his best areas. So it's a bit difficult for him. You know, Jack Grealish and Jeremy Doku, one of them coming back from injury recently, the other one sort of.
Here we go again. I totally get you, but I mean, it's been a shadow, hasn't it, throughout most of the season? And it's, again, we're sort of sat here going, who is it going to be? Because we're no closer to an answer.
Yeah, and Bernardo Silva, even too, his performances have been good, but they haven't been standout in any way. It's not like you can look at that and say, oh, I know that Pep is going to put this player in this spot because they've been playing out of their mind. It is just he can go for whatever he wants here. And I have honestly no clue what front five he is going to pick, aside from Erling Haaland, aside from Phil Foden probably being there. He could, the lineup graphic could come out tomorrow an hour before kickoff. I could see three other names there, no matter who it is, and I wouldn't really be surprised at this point. And that is pretty wild to say, especially from my perspective as someone who is so like in depth with the lineups typically. I have no idea what's going to happen with this 11, especially because in such quick succession before playing Real Madrid, he needs to rotate in the likes of Nunez at some point. He needs to rotate Kovacic in and out again. Oscar Bob, maybe a start somewhere. Doku and Grealish, you probably want them to both get a start, at least one in these next two, to at least get some sort of view on them, bring some rhythm to their legs before Real Madrid. And it's just very difficult to balance that and guess two games ahead how Pep is going to, you know, it's pretty much like a coin toss which game he's going to rotate players in and which players that's going to be. So I don't have much to say. I think the one thing that I do want to add in here just as a sort of speculative point, which maybe this will drive a broader conversation, is when we did lose that game to Villa, of course Rodri was a massive miss there, and I think his progression through the middle and his presence through the middle will solve a lot of the issues that we faced. But City only had, by my count, looking at the who scored chart here, we only had 15 touches in the box, and we only had two shots, and those shots came in quick succession by Erling Haaland. I wonder if Jeremy Doku is the right start here simply because you get that box penetration just straight off the bat. You know we're going to get 10 to 15 touches in the box from his feet. And even though his final product, you can criticize it, I think in a match like this, it might make sense. It also might make sense to, again, like I said, get Jack Grealish out there before Real Madrid, where ostensibly Pep will want him on the pitch. I'm not really sure. I'm excited to see what this 11 is going to look like, because I want to be pleased by the end of the 90, but it's open to Pep to really do what he wants with this right now.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I think had you asked me at 3:30 p.m. UK time on Sunday, do I want Jeremy Doku starting against Arsenal, I'd have said no. But if someone had sort of leaked Arsenal's game plan and you could sort of just see how they'd set up, I think maybe Jeremy Doku would have been a much better fit in that game, just for simply just the unpredictability of it more than anything, and something that isn't just going to be passed side to side. Aston Villa, we kind of know they're going to set up in a similar way, at least defensively, and I do agree there. Jeremy Doku could be a man, at least from, you know, the start, just to see more than anything, because he does look like City are in need of a spark. David, I want to take it back to a conversation around Kevin De Bruyne. And we did cover this a bit earlier in the week, whether or not, you know, for bigger matches or even medium matches, it depends where you sort of put this one on the scale, that is there a possible argument emerging that he could be more of an impact player once or twice, you know, for the big games, the season defining fixtures, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to want him off the start. But I'm trying to think, was it Everton earlier in the season? He came off the bench just recently after that, coming back from injury, and Newcastle as well. You know, we've seen he galvanizes a stadium, an away end, a home crowd, wherever it might be. And then obviously with Phil Foden, the conversation around him continues to rumble on. Do you think it's one or the other for City? Is that what you kind of expect City to go with for the rest of the season, given the fact that Foden was hooked and it hasn't, I'm trying to think of an example, bar maybe Brentford, it hasn't really worked where both of them have been on the pitch at the same time?
Yeah, I think so. I think I said it on social media the other day after the game, that I think in certain games you can tell within the first 2 minutes whether having De Bruyne and Haaland on the field is going to be good for City or potentially bad for City. It's maybe a bit over the top saying this, but I remember when Balotelli used to play for Man City, you would know within the first 2 minutes whether he was getting sent off or not, and whether you're playing 10 minutes.
You could smell it, couldn't you?
You could tell it straight away. And like the Arsenal game, you just knew straight away that you're essentially playing with two half players, because they are so ineffective in certain setups that at the moment, a game like Villa at home, I would 100%, if I was Pep, which obviously I know I'm not, I don't have his intel and everything else, but Foden should be starting centrally and De Bruyne should be either benched, or it should be De Bruyne playing and Alvarez should play instead of Haaland, and give at least one of them needs to drop out the starting 11. Whether that will happen, whether it's allowed to happen, who knows? But for me, they can't play every game together when we know what the setup's going to be like, because it just doesn't work. unfortunately. It just doesn't. I would, right now, Phil Foden and Alvarez are probably the two players that I would want to see in the side, because Foden centrally is brilliant and Alvarez is probably the most rested he's been all season, and he has goals in him. The moment, there's a lot of players in that side that don't have a huge amount of goals. If you have Grealish and Doku, you're confident we're going to get a goal from either of them? Probably not. If Alvarez starts, he's always got a goal in him. Foden's always got a goal in him. And we need goals.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because Alvarez, wrongly in my opinion, took plenty of stick earlier on in the season. I think sort of maybe January, February time, you could start to see him looking a bit more jaded. And thankfully for City, Kevin De Bruyne's return meant that City could rotate a little bit. But he was always popping up with a goal or an assist. And even when he was playing badly, like you say, David, he was a safe bet to at least contribute. And Alex, do you think, maybe sort of just tying back into that Haaland and De Bruyne conversation, because the two, for me anyway, very similar. Not they're not similar players at all, but in terms of just their impacts and their profile and their role, they are, you know, the megastars. And most of the time, they're going to be first names on the team sheet. They're going to be the guys you look to and turn to. But do you think maybe sometimes it helps to have them out of the team for half a game to get that hunger back? And I'm not saying that because, look, Haaland is going to start against Villa tonight, but, you know, maybe against Palace or something like that, a quick start, because Julian Alvarez is more than capable. And I don't know if I'm going to be pounded for saying this, but sometimes I would maybe like to see Alvarez at least on a par with Haaland in terms of starts now and again, especially in this tough running.
I do think there's merit to that, but for me, I'll start with Haaland. He needs to start both of these games from the simple perspective that he doesn't have that sort of like goal-scoring form that you would want him to have going into a tie against Real Madrid. Because I think we can point a lot of different places to the issues that he's had this season, and I think that's really what it is. It's sort of this amalgamation of different issues that are just these tiny things slightly off, but they all add up together.
A bit of unluck as well, to be honest. In fairness to him, he's been unlucky at times.
Most definitely. But on top of that all, we also can't overlook that there is something slightly off about him in terms of his finishing and just in terms of how efficient he is in terms of the chances that come to him. And again, I think in part is that they're not coming as sort of evenly spread across the match as he would expect. They're not as consistent as he had last season. And for a striker, that's a major thing. If you're getting, you know, a consistent number of chances a game and they're coming in a consistent manner and those patterns are established, it's a lot easier to get yourself into the mindset to know where to be and the timing and just everything that goes into finishing that chance. Whereas if you have three chances in a game, they're all coming at sporadic times, you don't know when they're going to happen, and they're all coming in a different manner, it's really difficult for even as someone as good as Erling Haaland to just switch on in that moment and put yourself in the right position to finish that chance. So for me, I do agree in the general sense, but for me, in these next two, he needs to start. It's more with Kevin De Bruyne. And I don't want to ramble on too long here, but Kevin De Bruyne is my all-time favorite player. He is my footballing idol.
Agreed.
But you look at this side with him in it this season, and even the Phil Foden issue aside, I just don't think we've had a performance that feels like City since Kevin De Bruyne has been back. And that's weird to say, because he is so much of what we know Pep's Man City to be. But there was a run of performances towards, I think it was right after the break in January, potentially right before that. My memory is not serving me great here. But there was a run of games where we felt like, you know, this is City. This is what we know City to be. And then we lost it all of a sudden. And a lot of those games came with Phil Foden operating through the middle. And alongside that, a lot of those games came with either Kevin De Bruyne wide or Kevin De Bruyne not involved. And for me, I do think that alongside him being motivated personally and the politics that go into that, managing a superstar like that, just alongside that, there is this matter of getting the team back on the same page. And I know in yesterday's episode, Adam mentioned again this term identity and just wanting to see this team express themselves in a way that is consistent. I don't know whether Kevin De Bruyne needs to leave the 11 for that to happen, or whether there needs to be some form of shakeup, or whether he is crucial to that happening, just changing roles or something. I'm not entirely sure, but I do want to see Pep figured that out sooner rather than later, especially with Real Madrid less than a week from now. It's just a tough one. Yeah, I don't really know how you manage that. And I'm just sitting back and waiting for it to unfold.
You never, I think it may come across as if we're saying Kevin De Bruyne is a hindrance, but that's absolutely not the case. It's just this, you know, he's mortal, and we kind of are seeing that, and to elongate his career beyond what is he now into his sort of early 30s, to take it into the mid 30s, to, you know, if possible, even take it into the late 30s, he's going to probably need a shake up.
And if I could add one more thing real quick back in here, I think that's also on Pep, because we've seen how averse he is to starting De Bruyne and Foden centrally from the off. Whereas if you look against Arsenal in that performance, they played centrally together. But because Foden was rotating in from the wing, it ended up being that Vardiol and Akanji were the wingers once we progress into the final third. I want to see Pep go for it at some point where he puts the two centrally and he has two true wingers either side of them. Or at the very least, have one true winger and have Vardiol on one side or Walker on the other side, whoever it is, just start them through the middle together from the off and just let them play there and trust them. And until that happens, the issues then go back to De Bruyne, when also in reality, it is Pep's fault for setting things up that way.
David, then to wrap, what do we reckon to that sort of front six? Obviously, as Alex said before, we probably know the back line. It's likely going to be the four players and the goalkeeper who finished against Arsenal. So, you know, chuck Rodri in there. Possibly, I think Chuck Haaland in there. They're the two safe bets. Who do you think will fill the other gaps?
I would like to see Grealish, Foden, and Doku, and probably either Kovacic or Bernardo Silva playing alongside Rodri. I think we're going to have a lot of the ball, so I wouldn't mind seeing. I love when Bernardo Silva plays centrally alongside Rodri. Whether Kovacic can do two games in quick succession, I don't know. That would be my preference. If I'm completely honest with you, I would probably like to see Alvarez start as well, but I just know that's not going to happen. But yeah, that would be it. Grealish, Foden, Doku.
Yeah, sounds good. Alex, any up in that?
My prediction was Grealish, Alvarez, Foden, Bernardo across the front four behind Haaland and in front of Rodri. So I'll stick with that, but I'll also say that, similar to David's Alvarez shout, I would like to see Doku there personally. As much as I have spoken against him this season, this is a match where I would really like to see him start.
Yeah, I think we all share that sentiment. I wonder if Pep just has too many good options, not enough great ones. And that sounds a little bit like a Fugees lyric, and I'll leave that with the people. Guys, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. Hopefully we've still got this energy and hopefully a little bit more optimism after the full-time whistle tonight. Regardless of the score, we'll be back tomorrow to review it. But yeah, thank you very much to David and to Alex. Listeners, thank you very much as usual. Really appreciate the support this time. Yeah, I know it's difficult for us to sort of get on the grind, but this is why we do it. This is why we build up for the whole season. Look, even the players, even us, you know, it is about this running. So if you can stick with us, we'll have plenty of coverage throughout now and the end of the campaign. But until next time, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.